Welcome to the premiere of our FX Podcasts, a weekly series of audio interviews revolving around the visual effects and design field. I'm John Montgomery, and beginning in July, we'll be posting a new netcast every week. Once the new version of iTunes is released, with integrated support for podcasts, you can get each week's interview automatically downloaded to iTunes, so you can listen to it then or on the go. And of course, you can always just listen to it online in your web browser. All the podcasts will later be archived, so you can refer to them later if you want. We hope you enjoy this addition to the site. This week, Mike Seymour interviews Scott Doherty and David Lingelfelser of Furious Effects in Burbank, California. Furious completed over 120 effect shots for the film Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which is holding its own at number 3 at the U.S. box office this weekend, grossing over $16 million in its third weekend of release. Let's join Mike and the folks from Furious Effects.
You're listening to FX Guide, and we're here with Scott. Hello, Scott. How are you?
Hi, very good.
Scott, give us an idea of where you're from and what you're doing.
Oh, well, we just started, a few of us here at Furious Effects. We all worked at a larger company called Cinesite in Hollywood. That's the Kodak-owned company. And we were there between, you know, basically about a decade, a little under a decade for some of us. And we worked on a ton of movies during that time. I worked on about 80 myself while at Cinesite. And then 2 years ago, Kodak decided to close visual effects interest in the States. So we were all, you know, having been entrenched in this one facility for so long, wondering what do you, you know, the age-old question, what do you do next? And luckily for us, looking back, we all decided it was time to try something new and maybe take advantage of, you know, what we learned over the years and the people we've met, to see if we could do it on our own on a somewhat smaller scale, but not smaller with the effect. We still like to do a lot of big, exciting work, but to definitely do it with, you know, smaller group, so there's, you know, less overhead, less, you know, internal stuff to have to deal with. You know, you're just working with a bunch of friends and people you've known for a long time who all have the same attitude, want to do great work, and are very dedicated to what they do.
When we spoke to you last, I think in February, you'd done 15 films, and I think you were working then on Underclass. So is Mr. and Mrs., which you've just finished, is that your 17th, or what are you up to?
We just counted today. We figure we're probably about 17 right now. We've done Mr. and Mrs. Smith. We had Fever Pitch, which came out in April. I think in February we just finished Constantine was the big thing we had just done. And we even did a shot for an upcoming Mike Judge comedy for Fox.
In fact,
now we're working on the next step. We just were awarded today a film called Just My Luck with Lindsay Lohan.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
In fact, Cinefex has you listed as working on Sky High next. Is that true?
Yes. I think Cinefex, I think, does list us as having worked on that movie.
And so the other big congratulations is for the opening of Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which completely due to you guys, opened at $51 million, I see.
Yeah, completely. I'm sure it had all to do with us and not to do with the stars, right?
Right. But having said that, still, it's nice to have a big hit.
Definitely. No, we're very excited about that. We kind of anticipated it would be big, but I think it even, most people are saying it did about probably $10 million more than anyone really anticipated. In the industry. So, no, we're very excited. It's always good to have, to know that many people are seeing the work that you do after you put in. I mean, we were on Smith to some degree for probably about a year and a half altogether, from early bidding for production budgets to doing some temp composites for kind of like previs for the director's cut for the studio. So, you know, we've been on it for a long time, so it's nice to know that all that work is being seen.
Unlike some of your other films, it's really a seamless visual effects film in the sense that, well, it's obvious that there must have been effects because it would be too risky to do that with the stars. You know, it's a very realistic use of visual effects as opposed to some of your other films which have been, you know, more fantasy.
Yeah, or supernatural kind of fantasy work, like in things like Riddick or Spider-Man or Constantine, which had kind of that demonic element but supernatural element to it.
And, I mean, I loved it. I thought you guys did a great job.
Oh, thank you very much.
I think
we're very happy about the work, and it was nice that we finally saw it about 2 weeks ago. It was nice to see it all on the big screen, all put together.
I particularly love the shot of Brad Pitt in the back of the station wagon going off the edge of
That was a perfect combination of have the the squabbles, the husband-wife squabbles, mixed with the harsh reality of physical violence.
Now, you have David with you. We might have a chat to David for a minute and then come back to you, if that's all right. So David was the visual effects supervisor for Furious FX, he's joining us now on the line. Hello, David.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Not too bad.
We were just starting to swing around to talking about how you did the effects for Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and we figured we might direct those questions at you.
Okay.
I guess we'd be really interested technically to have some idea about the pipeline, and starting, I guess, with the role of previs.
This movie, pretty much, Mr. and Mrs. Smith didn't really have a lot of previs. We pretty much just went off of storyboards and a lot of conversations with the visual effects supervisor and some... tried to get the director as much as we could to try to get his input, and then pretty much, off those meetings, we'd come back to the office and then pretty much, bang it through with either the 3D artists that were, if it was a heavy 3D shot, or just internally with the 2D guys.
And what was the actual pipeline once you got, I presume you got the stuff scanned at 2K Cineon, was that right?
Yeah, pretty much it would come from Pack Title, usually was the scanning recording house, then we'd get it in-house here, send it to our 2K playback machine, have a review. If it had 3D, we'd bring the 3D artist in and the compositor in, and then I'd review with those guys at the playback saying what was needed for that shot. And then pretty much all the 3D was done in Maya, and all the 2D for probably about 99.9% of the time was done in Shake, a little bit of combustion for rotoing. And if there was any heavy 3D tracking, that was done in Equalizer, 3D Equalizer.
And what were your, what was your 2K playback device you mentioned there?
Pardon me, what was that last part?
What was your 2K playback? You said when you first got back, you viewed it on your 2K playback
station.
Yeah,
it's a product called the Frame Thrower.
Cool.
And it runs pretty much PC-based, but it's full 2K playback that just loops the image. It holds 85 minutes of 2K files.
And when you were working with Mayer and Cineon files, what was the pipeline? Were you working at just 10-bit log, or was it was there a float, or was it... It looked like it was mainly...
All the stuff was done, yeah, all the stuff was done in float. It was all float.
And your pipeline from 3D, given that you had to produce a lot of very photorealistic stuff,
mm-hmm.
Let's, if we can, just use as an example the car chase sequence with the minivan.
Okay.
Because there's some good, great shots in that. And I know there are some 3D tires and axle
yep.
stuff that happens,
yep.
as well as the side panels to the minivan
yep.
that they're in. So just walk us through what you'd get from 3D in terms of layers. Would that be pretty much the 3D, or would you have it broken down into multi-pass rendering stuff?
Yeah, pretty much a lot of the stuff for like the axe, like one of the shots that we have broken down, I think, on our website is it has to deal with a tire and an axle, and from 3D we pretty much, the axle, you pretty much got the diffuse pass, you got a shadow pass, you got a highlight pass, and that was pretty much it for the axle. And then for the tire, we pretty much got the diffuse pass of the tire, a highlight pass, a broader spec pass, and then we got a dirt pass for the interior, so if the tire flipped over, you can actually see brake dust inside the inner part of the tire. And then we got a smoke pass, because a lot of times the tire was coming out of a piece of smoke from one of the cars, so we wanted to make it feel like the tire was actually dragging the smoke with it.
So you did that in Maya. What were you? What was the renderer that you were using?
The renderer was Maya then.
Okay. And then from there you'd pass... were you producing float to Shake at
Maya
that point?
Was to the actual Maya elements were 10-bit.
Right. And then you would go into Shake?
We'd go into Shake, and then basically, keep the plate, the 2K Cineon original plate, in float space. And then that's why we broke out all the specs and highlights, so we had, and shadow passes, so we had the most control, so nothing would clip in any odd way, and you wouldn't get negative black values and, stuff like that.
And obviously, it's probably impossible on the chase sequence, but were you on set to do, record stuff? I mean, were you taking... measurements on set?
For a lot of the tire stuff, no, we were not. But
yeah.
For the blue screen stuff, we were there for pretty much all the blue screen background shooting plates.
Yeah, I imagine the tire stuff would be really hard because of the
yes.
logistics of it.
Yeah, but what we did was one day we actually... Studio Pictures Vehicles, I think that's the name of the company, that actually loaned out their, you know, rented the Beamers, and we went over there for a day and took photos of all the tires and, you know, the wheel wells so we can actually use and try to steal as much from, you know, much of those textures as possible. Try to, you know, go the same time of day with the same kind of lighting so we could get the best kind of reference.
Talking about time of day, a number of the shots, I think you were doing day for nights, right? On the break out of the jail, I think that was day for night,
yeah,
right?
A couple of those were day for night. Those, again, we used, a lot of them were used, we had reference, they shot reference for those, and I think one still I was able to grab, like a couple light posts where I could actually track in a nighttime light post. So what I would do, I'd steal it from the photo and then track it in so you'd actually get the appropriate light fall off that would wrap around the pole. But for the most part, it was pretty much all created in shake, just darkening down and using different kind of Luma keys and actual rotomats to darken some areas more than others.
While the explosion of the house and stuff is obviously really spectacular, I've got to say the stuff that impressed me was how realistic the comps were of the actors in the chase sequence, because you must have had a lot of green screen there.
Yeah, there was a good amount of blue screen. I think there was about 15 blue screens in there.
And it's hard to get those out-the-window shots to always sell well.
Mm-hmm. What we did in there was we worked with the DP in getting as much raw footage as possible of what the actual exterior would look like, how overexposed it was compared to the interior.
Yeah.
And then we basically would balance that, and then we threw in a ton of interactive lighting on them to try to help sell, like, you know, reflections bouncing off their face or, you know, things like that, or added extra reflections on the windows to kind of help sell, you know, that there's an actual window there, because a lot of times when you're doing blue screen comps, you don't, there aren't a lot of reflections there, so once you put the background in, it looks like there's just a, you know, piece of a background cut out, and it looks really bad. So we were tossing in a lot of reflections on the windows, and we actually did a lot of post-camera moves to help break up the staticness, because a lot of times when you do blue screen comps on a stage, you know, the camera's for the most part locked off and it just sits there, and that's like a dead giveaway. When you see that in a movie, you're like, oh wow, look at that car, look how still it is. So a lot of times we were going in and putting pretty dramatic handheld moves to kind of make it feel like, you know, there was another, it was a POV of the Beamer or some, you know, another car, like, right behind them.
And when you'd finished the shots, I presume you would, you obviously go through an approval process. Mm-hmm. Was there a DI as well? Was it?
Yes, there was. Well, yeah, once the shot got final and filmed, then the 2K file, the digital file, would be dropped off at a company called TDI for the actual color timing of the film.
And generally speaking, how much, like on the day-to-night stuff, was that done before you delivered, and how much was done in part of the DI?
All the day-for-night stuff was actually done all here at our company. They didn't enhance any of that.
So, generally speaking, it was a polish grade rather than a major technical DI grade. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I would say for the most part, after I saw the film, pretty much all the effect stuff that we touched, which I think is 120 shots, I think it was just an overall, you know, just color timing. Like the chase sequence, they pretty much just went, you know, like more contrast, you know, the blacks were really deep compared to when we worked on it. And they just went a little bluer overall, but they didn't, you know, they didn't dramatically go in and like tweak anything on top of what we did.
And how big was your team on the project?
Team was probably about 16 artists, if I'm right. About 16 people.
And how long do you reckon you worked on it for? I think you said earlier.
Pretty much, I mean, yeah, Scott said earlier it was about 18 months on and off bidding, but the work actually rolled in very slowly at the beginning, probably around November of last year, and then we finished the end of April of this year.
Right, so were trailers out when you were finishing still? They must have been.
Oh yeah, definitely, yeah, without a doubt.
That's always kind of stressful when you see them.
It is, but this is probably one of the first movies that I worked on. Thank God, because it was such a crunch. The time schedule was so crunched that we actually, all our trailer shots, we were the first shots we actually got in production, so those were really far along when the trailers came, and they were happy with the state that those shots were at. So, because most of the time when you work on a movie, like I remember when I worked on X-Men 2, we did the BAMF on that sequence, and every shot that was in the trailer that they wanted to BAMF was one that we didn't even begin to touch.
Right, right. Well, thank you very much for your time, and
yeah,
We look forward to seeing your next project when that's up.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks a lot. And
all right, thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.